The Hudson Project is a new three-day music festival from Michael Lang, the co-creator of the Woodstock Music and Art Festival. The festival will feature The Flaming Lips, Modest Mouse, Kendrick Lamar, a DJ set by Moby, and so much more. Winston Farm in Saugerties, New York will host four stages along with a fifth interactive performance area at the center of the site highlighting local musical acts and performance artists. In addition to the musical talents, a wide range of interactive activities will keep attendees stimulated throughout the weekend, filled with music, food, and camping. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Michael Lang to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being here.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you here. Is this something that's always in the back of your mind of, yes, I would like to do this, and okay, the stars aligned, or is it just, oh, okay, I want to do this right now, and we'll do it?
This has been an idea we've had since the 94 event, since we did Woodstock at Winston Farm in 1994.
The
25th anniversary, yeah. We'd always sort of hoped to come back and do continuing music at the site. Didn't sort of work out for many years. And about 3 years ago, I contacted the Schaller family, who owns the farm, and started talking about bringing music back. And they love the idea. And so we started to put this together.
Hmm. What is the challenge in doing? I mean, your story is fascinating because it's always like fighting with somebody to get that right. I mean,
yes.
that's part of it. Just look, we just want to put on a show for God's sakes.
Yes.
So, what do you think that challenge is?
Well, for the 94 show, our challenge was that we were sort of fighting our past. You know,
yeah.
The thruway is going to be closed and all those kinds of things.
Right.
Which turned out, you know, not to be the case, and everybody had a really good time, and it went very well. It's 19 years later. The county hasn't really had that kind of an event, a big music event, since. And so there's a learning curve. You know, people have to make sure the event's going to be safe and that all the details of the public safety and accommodation, you know, are properly done. And so there's a lot of groundwork to be done before you get the go-ahead from county and town officials.
And it almost sounds, and I know this isn't the case, but it almost sounds like the easy part is kind of like getting the acts together.
Yeah, putting the show up seems to be the easiest part of this, yes. We've opened the grounds, you know, basically as a festival ground, a place where camping events can occur, but also single-day concerts. And we're bringing promoters in who have a lot of experience, who've done their shows in other places. So there is, you know, some confidence that can be had in terms of who the personnel are that are actually running these things. But still, you know, as I say, the county hasn't had the experience and hasn't gone through the process in quite a while.
What is it about this area, this site, and even sites in general of what you're looking for? Because it seems you always very much want to be a part of the land, to be on a large piece of land, but still be, well, for want of a better term, kind of out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to have too much of an impact on the surrounding community.
Yep.
Not everybody likes to listen to this kind of music over a period of days. And and so you do look for something that's kind of remote but still very accessible. This is the best site I've found in New York State. I mean, we looked in 69. We looked, in fact, when we did the 69 festival, the Winston Farm was our first choice. Unfortunately, the Schaller, the grandfather of Jeremy, who I'm working with now, wasn't interested, so we had to look further. And we found Bethel, which was great, but still not as ideal as the Winston Farm would be for a large event. So what we're hoping, you know, for is to have this continue every year, to do different kinds of music on the site throughout the summers, from country to rock to indie to jam band. And this is just the ideal place. It's beautiful. It's accessible. A lot of the groundwork has been done. We have roads that we put in 94 that are still viable. A lot of the drainage is still in. We just started doing the entrance roads this week to start preparing for this summer.
Mm. You spoke a moment ago about a lot of it is fighting your past, but that it's been a long time, right? So I mean, you're beyond a lot of that, I would think, and almost to the point of where it has Woodstock has such an iconic status to it that when you come in and say, oh, we'd like to do this, that alarm bells would go off and people would say, not alarm bells as much as like dollar signs.
That's true, and that helps.
Yeah,
that definitely helps. I mean, these are smaller events. This first event, which is being produced by SFX and MCP, is probably going to be around 20,000 to 25,000 people. It's permitted for 25,000, and so we want to start off slow and get people acclimated to it. There's, you know, still some people who are worried about the infusion of a lot of people into town, and other people who are looking forward to it, frankly, because it's business.
Yeah. The thing that I find fascinating about the festival is, well, if there's one word to describe it, I think it would be eclectic.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
I mean, you've got groups from all over the spectrum here, and I'm proud to say many that I love and others I have never, ever, ever heard of.
Same is true for me.
Right. So that's cool, right? Yeah. I mean, that's what you want.
Yes, you do.
So what were you looking for in a group?
Well, you know, you look for someone who has the ability to grow, someone who's serious about their careers, and has gained some degree of public notoriety. There's also new talent that you want to introduce that, you know, will hopefully become the next big act. But basically, for an event like this, you look for something that really is eclectic and will appeal to a wide sort of range of people. It's an 18-plus event.
18-plus event.
Yeah, so there won't be anybody there who's under 18. So this music is really keyed to the 18 to 25 crowd.
And it is, so it's safe to say that neither of us are in that crowd. So
yes.
So for them, for you to do that, you have an understanding of what works for that crowd, of what will come in, of meaning entertainers,
yes,
of who will sign on the dotted line and will want to be a part of those.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, the MCP has done these events very similar to this in terms of the lineup before with their Counterpoint events in Atlanta. And so they have a good feel for what will attract the right crowd.
Yeah. It seems that the issue is always over multi-day events that it's always it's consistency, right? I mean, you have to have a strong first day, a strong second day, a strong third,
yes,
day. I mean, that all has to work out, and that would seem difficult in the structuring to find those.
I think that's part of the fun is programming,
yeah,
so that you sort of bring people through the days, you know, in the right way, so you sort of build to an excitement and then let it down so that you can, you know, sort of spend the next 12 hours getting ready for the next day.
Mm.
But that, you know, programming, especially when you have multi-stages, is kind of the a lot of the fun of this.
So when you show up at, I mean, are you still showing up at like planning board meetings and that kind of stuff? Are you still doing,
yeah,
that?
Yeah.
So when you show up, what's the reaction? I mean, it's got to be much different than it was, obviously.
Well, you know, when we first introduced this to the town of Saugerties, they were very receptive. I mean, everybody seemed really positive about it, the business community, the people in general. And I think that's because the experience they had in 94, which was, you know, so 10 times the size of the events we're talking about now, was really positive. So, you know, and everybody's interested in doing business. Everybody's interested in increasing, you know, the tourism and traffic flow and use of the town's facilities and hotels and gas stations, et cetera. So they look at it as an economic boom and also as something that, you know, is going to be a positive thing PR-wise for the town.
When you're bringing that many people, I mean, as you say, it's 25,000 is what it's capped at. Growth could come at that site, do you think?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, you know, not to put too much of a point on it, but in 94, we had probably over 300,000 kids at that site on a given day.
All right.
So it can accommodate quite a few people, but we're certainly not contemplating anything like that. And we'll probably keep events to 50 or 60,000 as a maximum, but it certainly can accommodate that size very well.
Is there a, do you think there is much of a want on the kids' part to be together and in that environment?
Very much so, I think.
Really?
You know, yes, absolutely, I think.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very sort of real personal kind of experience. It's not, you know, over your telephone or your computer. It's getting together with people and bonding and becoming a community and sharing in things that you love, the kind of music, the kind of food, the kind of interaction.
I'm gonna sound crotchety, and I don't mean to, but it's a long way of getting to a question, which is, it seems to me that in this current state of concert going, which is obscenely expensive, to see one act at an arena, and where often I feel as an audience member like I am being imprisoned. Because you can only go here, you can't go there, you can't do this, you can't do that, anything you do, you get yelled at. And meanwhile, you think to yourself, my God, well, I just spent like $1,000 to come here, and I can't even stand up, for God's sakes. So, and I ask the question because I have something to compare it to. In my life, I have something to compare it to of a time of going to a concert when it wasn't like that.
Yeah.
So for these kids, this group that you're going, they grew up in that environment of sort of being, you know, strangleholded in,
yes.
in different areas. So what is it, so I asked the question before of what is it like for them when you sort of let them loose and say, okay, here, go have fun.
I mean, they love it. I think that's really what has contributed to the growth of the festival. Sort of business in this country. Festivals have gone, you know, and grown up in all kinds of places around the country, you know, from the Bonnaroos and Coachellas to
right.
the smaller events.
Right.
And it's because you have that kind of freedom and that ability to sort of hang with your friends and really go through an experience that is separate from your everyday existence. It's sort of like a vacation.
And everything will be okay.
And everything will be fine. Yeah, you're taken care of. You know, you have everything that you need, and you're surrounded by the kind of music that you love and friends that new and old.
Mm. When you think, is it, going back to a programming question, because it is so eclectic, there is a little bit of an introduction, I think, for many people mm-hmm. of some of this music, and then also there'll be things that people are waiting to hear. You don't want to turn them away, and yet you want to. Bring them in, but that's all part of it, and I assume that was the way it was in 69.
Yeah, it was. I mean, we booked the acts that we knew were very much a part of our counterculture and really our way of communicating what was going on in our lives, and then we looked to bring artists who had really not been seen by the public very much or at all, but people that we thought would be able to translate into sort of very popular. Situations and it worked well. I mean, the Joe Cockers and the Crosby, Stills, Nash and Santana and bands like that were just, you know, sort of unknown at Woodstock, but from there broke into big careers
and became and so many became iconic.
Yes.
And do you think the festival helped them become iconic?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, they definitely attribute their performance at Woodstock to that.
How much of that do you look at as a? I guess I ask the question because I mean, like, you were very young.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so how do you like top that?
Yeah.
I mean, do you even try? I mean, is it because it's such like it's our history. It's such an iconic moment, and mm-hmm. I don't even know. Do you come to a realization of okay, well, that is a once in a lifetime thing, and now I will go on and do other stuff.
Absolutely, you have to. I mean, you have to sort of move past it and say this was a unique event, a unique time, a wonderful happening, and now it's. Time to do the rest of your life.
Yeah. You wrote a book, The Road to Woodstock, which I thought was just one of the best. There was a lot coming out that year about around the anniversary of mm-hmm. the 40th anniversary.
Yeah.
And we're at 45 now, right?
Yeah.
So it's incredible to me because there was so much coming out. And I just found the book fascinating because you had so much to say and there was really a lot there of fascinating stories that you told about the time. And one of the things that stayed with me is just that you were able to, and I think you were on at the time where that and correct me if I'm wrong, but that you were able to, amongst the craziness, to be able to enjoy yourself in that moment of the that there were times where you could just sort of look up and understand make the conscious effort of understanding what was happening.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was definitely a dream come true. And to sort of stop and take a breath and look around and realize that it was actually happening in the sort of vision only on steroids that we had envisioned was incredibly rewarding.
And does it take time to realize the impact that it had on people, how it changed people?
Yes, certainly beyond the people who were there. I mean, we kind of knew the impact it was having on us who were on the ground, but seeing how it affected people beyond that, you know, it took a lot of years of retrospect.
So when you look at this festival and what we're talking about today and this Hudson Project, your role will be what? I mean, like on show days, you'll be doing what? I mean, you're going to have a walkie-talkie in your hand, or are you just going to be enjoying it?
I'll probably have a walkie-talkie in my hand, but I will be enjoying it. I mean, it's really the responsibility of SFX and MCP to do the day-to-day chores and on-ground producing. We'll be there just to lend advice and in case something needs helping. But I'll be enjoying it, absolutely.
And then the growth and projects down the line that you would like include what?
Well, we're planning on a big yoga event in August, actually the Woodstock anniversary weekend, which will be sacred music and some popular music and lots of yoga classes and lots of healthy food and lifestyle events. And what we're looking down the road is a country event and a rock event and pop music and a jam band and really everything, really bringing a big variety of music into the area.
And all at that site.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just for those who may not be familiar with it, describe the site of how many acres and what you're looking at.
The farm is 850 acres.
Wow.
The footprint we're using is about 350 acres. Beautiful fields against the mountain backdrop. It's really convenient. It's right across the street from the 20th exit of the New York State Thruway. Mm-hmm. And it's just a lovely, lovely spot to spend a weekend.
It's the Hudson Project Music Festival. It'll take place July 11th and 13th. And right now the work is getting the word out and selling the tickets and getting people. And how's that going so far?
It's going well. It's going very well. And the other work is getting the site ready.
Yeah. And that's and the last time there's been anything on the site?
Was in 94.
Okay, so there it's still a lot to
it's still a lot to prepare.
A lot to do.
It is a lot to prepare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you label the 94 a success?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It was I thought an incredible experience.
And then the one after that was in Rome?
One in Rome had its problems. It, you know, a lot of it had to do with the booking at the time, the kind of bands that we had. It was kind of an angry period in music, and it was really more of an MTV sort of lineup and event than a Woodstock event, as I found. A lot of people had a great time. You know, there were fires at the end of it, which left this sort of, you know, this sort of impression that it was hot, if you will. It happened after the show was over, luckily.
Yeah.
But it was not a typical, you know, what you'd call a Woodstock event.
And which I would think would make the first and the 25th even more sweeter.
Yeah,
I guess.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The Hudson Project Music Festival will take place July 11th through the 13th. More information is available at hudsonmusicproject.com. HudsonMusicProject.com, and because I mentioned it earlier, Michael's book, which has been out for a bit but is in paperback, is The Road to Woodstock from the Man Behind the Legendary Festival, which is a great read as well. Michael Wang, a pleasure to have you aboard. Thank you very much. I wish all the luck in the world with the festival.
Thanks very much.
Had a blast. Thank you. You're listening to Roundtable on WAMC.